Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Indie Authors Roundtable. I'm your host, R.L. Jackson, author of the Crashing in Bulwark series and the On the Set and Departed Soul series coming soon. I'm also the editor-in-chief of Indie Authors Monthly magazine. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Carol P. Roman, author of over 54 award-winning children's books. I also write under the pen name Britt London and authored both Bulwark and The Knowing in the Bulwark anthology. I am creative director of Indie Authors Monthly magazine. Hello.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us. Today, we introduce you to Kimberly Stewart. Kimberly Stewart has always loved a good story, good writing, and a good laugh. Stewart started writing to cope with the isolation and charming chaos of motherhood. A few vignettes turned into the seeds for a novel, which turned into a two-book contract. The Heidi Elliott books, Balancing Act and Bottom Line, while not autobiographical, were much cheaper than therapy. Act Two, a novel in perfect pitch, is the story of a diva who gets stuck in the Midwest against her will. Stretch Marks, a modern love story set in Chicago, and Operation Bonnet, the story of a young girl with wild hair and her dream to be a PI in Amish country, together sold more than 40,000 copies.
I have to say that's impressive. Welcome to the show, Kimberly. Sounds like you have a really busy life. How do you squeeze writing into the chaos?
Writing helps me maintain my sanity in the chaos. I think you two can probably identify with that too. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. For me, I think it's just like any other discipline. I know you two can identify with this. It's a matter of blocking out the time in whatever part of the day can suit, and then getting your booty in the chair. I try to treat my writing time as a doctor's appointment. And sometimes I really even need to think of it as a doctor's appointment for my kids, because I might even blow off a doctor's appointment for myself. But really treating it as something that I just can't cancel, and trying to ignore the laundry and all the other things that grab for my attention, and just making that a time every day when I'm working on deadline.
I agree. We definitely can attest to that as well. Chef Fed, creator of Fetish and Love Bites, said of your novel, Sugar, "Sugar hits the spot, a menage a trois between dramatic reality television, the merciless Michelin star chef's competition, and a heart-fluttering romance. When Kimberly Stewart creates the marriage of true love and luscious pastry, the pages melt like chocolate between your hands. As an aphrodisiac chef, this is a must-read." So are you a pastry chef? And if not, how did you do the research?
I am definitely not a pastry chef. I am an amateur baker. I love baking and I love cooking. And so that's just kind of a little bit of therapy for me when I get to do those things. But the research for Sugar was so much fun, because I got to delve into the world of people who do that on a daily basis. Pastry chefs have such weird lives, especially ones working in Michelin star restaurants or high-end restaurants on the coast. And it was so fun to read about how they, go to bed at insane hours, wake up at insane hours, and in between are just creating. I'm not quite sure how in the world they have the energy to do it, but it was sure fun to read about. So the way I approached the research for that book, I read a ton, starting just kind of with very general sources and digging deeper and deeper to, you know, a lot of memoir, very, very fascinating memoir of people who worked in all parts of the restaurant industry. I read a lot of very technical pastry manuals that I think are just probably required for people who are entering that field or who are within that field. I read a lot of recipes in the cookbooks of high-end chefs, and kind of mimicked what they were doing. I also have one of my uncles is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. And so it was very fun to pepper him with questions about his time there and about his life as a chef. And then there's a local chef in my community who owns 5 or 6 fantastic restaurants. And I asked around long enough that I found a friend of a friend of a friend who knew him and reached out to him on my behalf. And he allowed me to follow him around and ask him a bunch of questions and sit in on his day, both in the front and the back of the house. And it was just it was such a fun experience. It made my writing richer for sure. And it was just, it made me able to write Charlie's story from a much more authentic point of view, I think.
You know, it's really interesting the way you're describing that. It's almost as if, you know, the passion that bakers and, you know, chefs, and I'd like to include dancers, you know, like ballerinas, that same passion
right.
is what we have when we write. Like we, you know, and then you're an amateur baker. So it's kind of like they always say, write what you know. So we
right.
do find a way to enmesh our own lives, right? Don't you feel that we pull from our own lives to create our stories?
For sure, for sure. And in fact, I really love pulling those threads long enough that I kind of indulge maybe in a part of my thinking or my interests or my curiosities in a way that I don't in my normal life. So I don't really have an interest in being a full-time pastry chef, but I'm totally curious about who they are. And I've had enough little bit of experience in my kitchen to have a little bit of a vocabulary. So I completely agree, Carol. I think our writing starts from something very organic in our own experience. The fun part, of course, is then taking that as a jumping off point and then creating a new world that is not necessarily what we live. And it's just fun for an escape.
Speaking of jumping, I have a question. Publishers Weekly said about Heartland, a heartwarming, faith-based tale of a driven woman struggling to straddle small-town life with big-city aspirations. That is a genre jump. That's a big one. How do you internally process genre jumping, or do all your books have the same roots?
They really are rooted in the same spot. I like to say, if you like Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movies, you'll probably enjoy my book. So I like to write quirky characters, and there's always a thread of romance, but it's very chemistry-based, kind of banter-propelled romance. I don't feel like it was a huge genre jump for me to have one foot in the inspirational or Christian market and then one in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
What I write is pretty there. You can definitely pick up on a similar voice in the two groups. I found that I have a hard time. The publishers of those two genres or those two camps sometimes have a hard time knowing where to put me. So, for example, you referenced Heartland. The publisher ended up putting that book on religion shelves in Barnes & Noble. So it was by, like, you know, the Bhagavad Gita and books on Buddhism or whatever, because there's one section for that. And that was a struggle for me. I really wanted that not to happen because I feel like I know my readers, and I know I'm writing contemporary women's fiction. So just because there's a faith infusion, it's definitely not a religion textbook. I'm very non-preachy. I have an aversion to those kinds of stories. I do not feel compelled to write a sermon at all. My faith is an important part of me. And so that just comes out sometimes in my stories, but they're very, definitely not didactic or you know, how to or proselytizing. And so I haven't fit so well in that camp. And then on the other side of things, my mainstream fiction is not super saucy. And so my Sugar came out, for example, right on the heels of 50 Shades of Grey. And Sugar is not 50 Shades of Grey. It's much more kind of rom-com. And so that was a struggle, too, because there were some publishers who really – we ended up with a publisher who completely caught the vision and did just a great job with that book. But in the beginning stages, we had lots of conversations with editors and publishers who really wanted to kind of morph that more into a 50 Shades spot on the shelf. And so I'm always feeling the need to kind of kick back on those things and to politely and respectfully maintain that there's room in bookstores, there's room on bookshelves for lots of different versions of romance or contemporary fiction, and that we should be willing to try.
Well, this is Ariel. I have a question about a Kindle reviewer. Excuse me. One reviewer said, Better Together, which is another book of yours, was happiness for me because it was realistic and honest. I could relate to it. We need more of these stories because a story like Better Together brings healing and lets us know that we're not alone. So hearing something like that, how does that review make you feel as a creative, and does it make you want to write more books that evoke those types of emotions?
You guys are so kind to find the sweetest review. That was a very nice review. That book touched on infertility and the pain that's associated with that, but also the joy and hope that come from kind of walking that road for a longer time. So that's super kind. I haven't heard that review. First of all, yes, it does inspire me to keep going, and it inspires me to write more. I know you two can identify with this, that a writer's life is largely solitary. The work that we do often, you know, the actual creating of books and of stories is very much on our own. And so it's such a joy to hear from the other side of the abyss when you hear, yeah, what you're writing is connecting to me and you know, just resonating with my life experience. It's just an honor to hear that. With that, however, I don't know if maybe I'm just a wimp, totally possible, but I don't read a lot of my reviews. If someone brings something to my attention, if my agent or editor has something to say about a particular one, I'll listen, you know, I'll definitely seek it out. But I found that once the book is in print, reviews are not super helpful. I mean, there's not a lot you can do. You can take some and move on to your next work. But for me, it's much more encouraging and purposeful to interact with readers in email and on social media and kind of hear and in person. I do a lot of speaking engagements. So that's kind of where I get most of my feedback from my books. It's amazing to me that I can read, you know, let's say there are 100 lovely reviews and 2 of them are negative. The 98 all blur together in a happy puddle, and then the 2 I memorize and replay for years to come. And so I just don't know that that's super helpful for me or healthy. I'm positive that my books aren't for everyone. And it took me a few years to get to the point where that's okay, you know, and that's okay that I don't, that not everyone, it's not, it doesn't float everybody's boat. The other thing with reviews, and I'm sure you found this too, people can slap those puppies up there, you know, because they ate a bad enchilada, and then it's up there forever. And so, you know, I always have to weigh that appropriately too. It's made me a much more conscientious reviewer myself. I'm very conscientious about reviewing books that I love, making sure to support authors that I love, because I know that those are very powerful in terms of communicating to the public what books are recommended, and also to publishers and editors.
You know, I don't mind the negative. Like, I go first to read a negative review because...
Oh, good for you.
They stay with you. But when I read a negative review, I take reviews as very personal. So then when I read it, just because that person didn't like it, usually that sways me to buy the book. Because I want to see if I think I have a weird kind of thing with that. But writing has helped me do that. And I don't get, you know, I think that sometimes we allow it to rock our confidence. To me, it builds the confidence as though, oh, yeah, that's what you're saying. I could prove I can do better. But I want to ask you, where do you come up with the inspiration for your characters?
Sometimes they are an amalgamation of people that I know who will never know that because I would never tell them. When I'm writing any scenes with children, I'm absolutely stealing from my own family life. I have 3 kiddos and they know they're in there. not word for word, obviously, but just this kind of the spirit of living with a 4-year-old or spirit of living with a 10-year-old. But now I have 2 teenagers, so definitely that's coming into my work for sure. I love pulling from the news and from storylines that I'm reading there. I don't know. I think I'm sure for you too as well. I just, you know, I kind of just pick up things as we move along. The characters become very real to me. And so I think maybe what starts as a little seedling from maybe someone I know or have known or an idea I hear bannered about, they take on their own personalities for sure and become incredibly real people to me. I always joke with my family that in most circles, you don't get paid for spending time with fake people. And in fact, in many circles that might be of concern for your mental health, but for us, we're lucky that we get to spend time with these people and let them live inside our heads. And I don't know about you guys, but when I'm finished with a work, then there's almost a little bit of a mourning, you know, because I've spent so much time with these people and then I'm done all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't,
right.
I don't reread my books, you know, when they come out, I don't read them. And so it really is kind of a goodbye when the final edited copy passes through my hands.
Wow. That sound like me. Like I haven't picked up either of my books either. Once I published it, mm-hmm. that's it. I only like share quotes. But I wanted to, you know, add my little opinion about reviews. Before I published, I never read reviews. But, you know, after mm-hmm. I published and, you know, those negative ones stick with you and you could tell they never read your book. They just had a bad day.
Right.
I read them
right.
now just like Carol does. And I vow to read the book to give the author the benefit of the doubt instead of, you know, just running with what that review said. But anyway... So this brings me to my next question. Sometimes you write your books, who you write your books for versus who they speak to are two very different things. So who is mm-hmm. your audience and why should they read your books?
I started this gig writing for my friends. So I had a newborn at home and I was learning for the first time about how to be a mom and how to navigate all those choppy waters. And I went from being a high school Spanish teacher, which I loved, and I loved my students, I loved my colleagues, to being home. I was a stay-at-home mom. And so that was a shocker for me. And I found that I was starting to write. I had not written before. I'd written all through college, obviously, and always loved writing, but I certainly had never thought of myself as a novelist. I didn't know anyone doing that. That sounded like a crazy job. It turns out it is a little bit of a crazy job, but I had no one modeling that for me. And so when I started to write, I really was writing for my friends. I couldn't find books that were really reflecting the humor and the tenderness and kind of the insecurity of early motherhood. This was 16 years ago. I think that genre has definitely blossomed since then. But at the time, I would look for books, for novels in particular, that were kind of in the space that I was living and couldn't find any. And my girlfriends and I would get on the phone and we'd laugh and joke about how this was just the craziest thing. And that was really what kept me sane during those years. But nothing in the bookstore really spoke to me for that. So really I wrote that first novel for my friends with them in mind, thinking, well, what would Amy laugh about? You know, what would really hit home with Mikayla? And I think I'm doing the same thing here 13 years later. I really, I'm still writing for my friends. I'm still writing to make them laugh and to cry and to connect with stories that ring true to their own. I think a happy ending is very underrated. And I know my friends love those. And so really I do, when I'm writing in that first draft, especially I'm thinking, you know, of my readership, the women that I know who are smart and funny and curious and complicated and broken in some ways, you know, we're all kind of slogging through this together. So I'm thinking about them. And I think that's the audience that has found my books to be could be things that they connect with and that they love.
Oh, awesome. Awesome reply. So my next question is, are you traditionally published, indie, or both what we call hybrid? And what do you like most about where you're at in that process?
Now I am hybrid. All of my books initially were traditionally published. After a certain number of years, I had the rights of the first five reverted to me. And so I re-released those under my own imprint. So those are now self-published. And then the remaining, let's see, that there's six under that imprint now. And then there are two that are still with traditional publishers. One with Skyhorse Publishing and then the other with Simon & Schuster. And so I like a foot in both of those worlds. I feel like, especially if you've been doing this for a while, your backlist, those books that you wrote at the beginning they don't get a lot of love. They don't get a lot of attention from your publisher. And it's been lovely for me to be able to find a new audience with those second editions of people who didn't know about me did not know about those books the first time they were published, or e-readers and e-book readers are just a totally different ball game, which has been so fun to connect to readers who read exclusively in those formats. And so I like having a foot in both. The perk of indie publishing has been I've loved that I have a little bit more control. I get to kind of steer the ship a little bit. And of course, that's also my nemesis in that area too, that I do have all the control and then all of the onus rests on me. So that's kind of a double-edged sword. But in general, I've really enjoyed it. And then I've really had a good experience with my traditional publishers as well. They're able to get access into bookstores, into larger selling marketplaces than I could. Sugar was picked up by Target, and Target doesn't take any self-pub titles. So that was lovely. And Heartland's getting a lot of lovely attention from TV and film people who are talking about it. So I think that's the lovely part about traditional houses, that they just have a bigger reach. But I'm at the point in my career where really every project that I get, I find it's a score because it leads to another project. It's a beautiful and huge blessing to be able to do this job. So anything that allows me to keep doing it and keep telling stories, I count it as a coup, and I'm grateful, whether it's in indie or traditional houses.
Are there any other books or authors that have influenced your style over the years? And, can you share who they are?
I'm a voracious reader, and I like fiction and nonfiction. So I'm not a very good person to ask that question because I'm like those dogs in Up in that movie where every squirrel, they're like, well, I'm a little bit like that. So whatever book I'm reading now is just my all-time fave. So I don't know. I do love, I really love the work of Marissa de los Santos. She is a writer, who is also just a lyricist with words. So I love her prose. I just love the way she writes, but I also love it that she writes beautiful sentences that string together in a page turner, right? I mean, sometimes I feel like I have to choose one or the other. Either it's a page turner with okay writing or just beautiful writing that really not a lot is happening with the plot. She marries both of those beautifully. So I love everything that she's written. I don't think I can write like her. I would love to, but she sure is an inspiration. Every time I read her books, I shut the cover and I think, oh, man, I wish I'd written that book.
I know exactly what you mean.
So, Kimberly, what's next for you? Do you have any signing events coming up that you want to tell everybody about?
We're headed into the summer here, and things are kind of slowing down, which is perfect. We've been a little bit too hectic at our house recently. So my next few a few events aren't really till the end of the summer. I'll be in Holland, Michigan for an event there at their public library in August. And then this fall I'll be at the South Dakota Book Festival and the Nebraska Book Festival. So I'm excited about that. And I've joined forces with a couple of authors that I just love. They're dear friends. And we've been doing some things together. We call ourselves the Traveling Pens. And it's Nicole Bart and Tosca Lee and I. And that has been so fun. We always have things going on, the three of us. We're all three in the Midwest. And we joined forces. We all three write for the same publisher. And it has just been so fun. So people can always find out where we're headed to. And we'd love to meet you on the road.
Sounds like fun. Can you provide the links to your books?
Yes. Probably the easiest way to get to them is just to go to my website, which is KimberlyStewart.com. That's KimberlyStewart.com. And there's a list of all the books and all the different vendors and places you can purchase them. And I'd also love to connect with people on social media. If you're an Instagram girl or guy, I'm at Kimberly.Stewart.Write.
Great.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Kimberly. It's been, a real pleasure talking to you and getting to know more about you and your books. I will definitely be trying to pick some of them up and read them. Like, I am pleasantly surprised with you as an author and as a person. I think it's really, really nice to have had you on today. And to our listeners, remember, if you want to, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to thank you. This has been so lovely. You guys were super kind, and it was a really fun conversation. So thank you for including me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
You're so welcome. Thank you. And to the listeners, remember, if you want to stay up to date with Kimberly and find out more information about her books, visit her at KimberlyStewart.com. That's KimberlyStewart.com. And visit her on Twitter and Instagram. This is R.L. Jackson saying so long for Carol P. Roman as well. We'd like to thank you, our guest Kimberly Stewart, and all of our listeners. We hope you'll tune in for another Indie Authors Roundtable, where we bring the latest in books, authors, and indie publishing to the table. Don't forget to catch the latest issue of Indie Authors Monthly magazine, available by subscribing to our newsletter and visiting IndieAuthorsMonthly.com. Thank you all so much. Have an amazing day, and see you next time.
Thank you, girls.